Even doctors are surprised at how fast Ken Braderman's ALS, more commonly called Lou Gehrig's disease, is progressing.
I can't walk. I can't stand. I have no use of my right hand up to my elbow, and I'm losing my left. That scares the heck out of me.
Up until this year, Braderman had lived in his own apartment. Now at 64, he's a resident of Harris Hill Nursing Home in Concord. Confined to a wheelchair, a nurse helps with bathing and feeding.
It's hard and humiliating.
With health fading fast, Braderman is thinking about the end of his life.
My wish is what it's always been. I want to be stuffed in a hefty bag and left out for the garbage men. But they say you're not allowed to do that, so I'll have to make some other plans.
Braderman enjoys a little gallows humor, but he's taking his final days seriously. His ALS may progress to the point where he can't swallow or breathe on his own.
No feeding tubes, no breathing devices. I don't want anything. I want to die peacefully and be left alone. I've always felt that way.
Braderman's younger brother, David, a Concord lawyer, will carry out those wishes if he becomes unable to make his own medical decisions. David is what's known as his brother's durable power of attorney for healthcare, sometimes called the agent.
It's hard to listen to on the one hand, but it's also comforting to have a very clear sense of what Ken wants. I think the worst thing, sitting in my shoes, is to not be sure what the person wants, because then you're left guessing.
The brothers have gone over the variety of medical events Ken may face and what he wants in each case. The plans are captured in his advance directive, a legal document sometimes called a living will. Every state has a system for advance directives. New Hampshire has one set form, a few pages long, available online and elsewhere. There's no fee. It doesn't even have to be notarized as long as there are two witnesses. There is a slight hitch, though. In the first section of the form, you designate your agent, who you want to make decisions for you, and also what you want to do about medically administered nutrition and hydration, feeding tubes to keep you alive. Then in part two, you can request that heroic efforts not be used, that only comfort care be provided. And then it asks again about medically administered nutrition and hydration.
And oftentimes when you were doing this with somebody, they'd say, well, didn't we just talk about all that? And we would generally say, yes, but you know, you have to now separately answer this and fill this out.
Sean LaFrance is with the Foundation for Healthy Communities. He says by asking the question twice, it meant New Hampshire's form didn't line up with the forms in other states. So there were cases, not often but some, where people who had directed that they not be kept alive by feeding tubes when death was otherwise imminent were given just that treatment because their forms were from out of state. With the legislature's redraft of the advance directive statute, that problem's been fixed. And the new version still does make space for people to write in their wishes about nutrition and hydration. Senator Peggy Gilmore is the law's prime sponsor.
And so this was an attempt to make things simpler, make the form more clear, crisper, and yet not change any of the intent or any of the choice and the wishes.
The use of nutrition and hydration to keep people alive when no chance of recovery is possible has at times been a politically divisive issue. That was certainly the case for Terry Schiavo.
The essence of civilization is that the strong have a duty to protect the weak. Cases where there are serious doubts and questions, the presumption should be in the favor of life.
In 2005, a protracted legal case between Schiavo's husband and her parents ended. The husband, who had legal authority to make decisions, wanted to remove life support for Schiavo after a massive heart attack left her with severe brain damage. The parents, devout Catholics, unsuccessfully fought the removal of a feeding tube. The case garnered a wave of media coverage. New Hampshire's rewrite of the advance directive statute was far less controversial. Some Republicans voted against the bill in the House, but it faced little opposition in the Senate, and the Catholic diocese in Manchester was okay with the changes. Even with the altered form, Don Rabin still sees problems. He's the state's long-term care ombudsman, basically the complaint department for New Hampshire nursing homes. He says what's directed in the form doesn't always get carried out.
Younger folks sometimes to take it upon themselves to say, well, I know Dad wants this, but I think this would be better for him. Well, that's not their job.
To ensure these documents work, it's important for both parties to actually sit and talk about what is wanted before an emergency arises. But those conversations can be tough to have. And as a result, only about a quarter of all adults in New Hampshire have completed advance directives. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at some efforts around the state to up those numbers and make discussions of death a little easier. For NHPR News, I'm Todd Bookman. For 20 years, Roy Quimby was a volunteer firefighter in the town of Unity. He boasts that he ran into buildings others ran out of. Now at 66, he's fighting something else.
Oh, it's totally devastating. You know, it's, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I was having some abdominal pain. We go in for a laparoscopy. No, that wrong word. Endoscopy. We've had a lot of oscopies. And we're told that it was cancerous. And it's like you go in because your stomach hurts, you come out because you're afraid you're going to die.
Quimby beat esophageal cancer a few years ago, but it's back in his bones, his ribs, spine, pelvis, femur. There's no prognosis. 2 weeks to 10 years is the best doctors can offer. So for now, he's on chemo and on his motorcycle, a Harley he rides to all his medical appointments.
We're not going to do any heroics to keep me going. My wife's going to make the decisions. And if, you know, if I'm going to be on a feeding tubes and breathing tubes and everything else, there's no sense in me being here. You know, I've always been active. I want to plan on staying active. If I'm going to sit around and stare at a ceiling, I don't need to be around anymore.
Quimby has an advance directive to ensure these wishes are carried out. He keeps a copy in Florida, where he spends his winters, and one at Norris Cotton Cancer Center in Nashua. If he had one, was actually one of the first questions staff at Norris Cotton asked. The entire Dartmouth-Hitchcock system is pushing its importance. DH has volunteers to help people complete the document and a team that works to ensure a patient's wishes are being followed. Dr. Sharona Sachs runs the palliative care group at the Lebanon campus. She encourages open conversations before serious illness or injury so that when certainty is needed, it's there.
For each person, what defines you and what do you most value and what are the outcomes that you would find acceptable or unacceptable? And spending some time really working through that with the people that are going to represent you.
Each morning, Sachs and her team sit down to discuss patients who may die in the next few months. Many of the cases are profoundly sad, and many of the families don't have advance directives to guide the process.
It is uniquely human to believe that mortality happens to other people. And there is some magical thinking that sort of says if I begin to write my contract around what my mortality might look like, then it would actually happen to me, and that would be terrible. And so I think there's a natural avoidance of issues around death and dying.
Only about 1 in 4 adults in New Hampshire have advance directives, and that's on par with national averages. The federal government has tried to boost that number. The 2009 uproar over so-called death panels was in reaction to language in the Affordable Care Act. The basic plan was to reimburse doctors for the time they spent consulting with Medicare patients on end-of-life options and advanced care planning. Back in 1990, there was another effort started, something called the Patient Self-Determination Act. That requires most hospitals and nursing homes to provide information about advance directives to patients upon admission, though it's usually done in a cursory way. At Maplewood Nursing Home in Cheshire County, staff do more than just hand over a pamphlet. Lorraine Howard works in admissions.
The biggest barrier to doing an advance directive when someone comes in a nursing home if they don't have one is residents will sometimes worry that their doctors haven't told them something. Why are you talking to me about death right now? Or that their family's keeping something from them, and then it scares them.
Howard says if someone is too frightened to discuss the document at first, she'll usually try to bring up the issue again a few weeks later. With clear information about the document's purpose, most people come around. Maplewood has near 100% participation.
It's just good customer service to our residents. We want our residents to have the best life they can. And advance directives, I truly believe, is part of it.
Nursing homes are one thing. In the broader community, outreach can be a lot harder.
Our flyers are saying, start the conversation.
Carol McShane is with TLC Nursing Associates. They provide home care services for people in New Hampshire and Vermont, and they're launching something called the Upper Valley Conversation Project, basically a series of meetings and events to encourage people to start advanced care planning. Experts are on hand to answer questions. There are guides and tools to help people talk about sensitive topics.
You know, we're not having a party. We're not, you know, we're not talking about stuff that's kind of fun to talk about. you know, life is fatal. We're all going to get to that point.
McShane says a lot of people don't fully understand what can happen if an advance directive isn't on record, especially during an emergency. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at those risks and the complicated legal system some families find themselves in. For NHPR News, I'm Todd Bookman. Dr. Tim Leahy prefers to spend his days in hospitals and clinics, not courtrooms. But earlier this year, he found himself in front of a judge. At issue was the fate of a critically injured patient on life support.
So this is a young man, really had been healthy for his whole life and loved being out in the out of doors in his motorcycle on a sunny day. And so that's what he was doing. And unfortunately, he got into an accident with a car and got a horrible head injury.
The man was brought into Dartmouth-Hitchcock with multiple fractures to his face and skull, bleeding inside of his brain. He was unresponsive.
They tried to, you know, give him medicines to relieve the pressure that began to build on his brain, and really nothing helped. And he was just catastrophically and irretrievably broken.
After 5 weeks in the ICU, Leahy says it was clear to doctors his condition wouldn't improve. The patient, young and previously healthy, had never spoken to his family about what type of care he would want in an emergency.
This poor guy and his poor family were in this horrible situation, which is unfortunately not that uncommon here in New Hampshire. The problem is that he didn't have a legal document that said what he wanted in case of catastrophe, and the truth is that most of us don't.
Without guidance and out of an abundance of caution, the family petitioned the court to decide if they could remove life-sustaining treatment. The judge asked Leahy to testify. In addition to his medical work, he's also chair of Dartmouth-Hitchcock's bioethics committee. It was an emotional hearing, and one that could have been avoided with a completed advance directive. But in New Hampshire, roughly 3 out of 4 adults lack these legal documents. Judges, for their part, would rather not be involved.
No, I shouldn't make that decision.
David King has 23 years on the bench in New Hampshire.
The decision should be made by the individual while they have capacity to make the decision, not by a judge who never met the person, in some cases is trying to determine the credibility of siblings who some say, you know, dad would want to be kept on life support and others say he wouldn't. Dad's the one that should make the decision.
To be clear, as long as family is in agreement about what should happen, these cases typically don't find their way to court. For many relatives, though, it's often surprising to learn that they don't get automatic authority to take over decision-making power for a loved one. That's because New Hampshire is one of only a handful of states without what's called a default surrogate consent statute, basically a hierarchy laid out in law that says if someone is deemed unable to make their own medical decisions, someone else close to them, a spouse, adult child, parent, or sibling, gets that control. Senator Peggy Gilmore says there's a group working to draft a bill that would create this type of system in New Hampshire. It could be ready as early as this fall. But she says it isn't so straightforward.
You know, if you do a default, and so what is it? It's the oldest child. Well, you know, families are more complex than a series of hierarchy.
If not properly implemented, these default systems can also take away the rights and wishes of disabled people and those with dementia. For people with no family to serve as decision maker, there's even a last resort option in New Hampshire. The court can turn to the Office of Public Guardian, a nonprofit based in Concord. Staff there get assigned to incapacitated clients, legally known as wards of the state. But even with a network to protect the voiceless, Dr. Tim Leahy says advance directives are the only way to maintain complete control of your care.
Life is complicated. They don't solve every problem. But wouldn't it be better for the patient's voice to still be in the room and for their preferences to be honored?
For NHPR News, I'm Todd Bookman.